We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? This is One Royal Way here on Kansas City Sports Network. Thank y'all so much for tuning in on YouTube, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you are taking this in. Really appreciate it. If you have not listened to the previous episode that was posted earlier this week, special edition for Mental Health Awareness Month, be sure to go check that out on One Royal Way as well. Joining me for the Royals recap week, my pal Kent Swanson. We're getting a little Chiefs Royals, little intermingle in here. How's it going, buddy?
It's the crossover of the century, man.
Oh yeah.
Dude, I've ducked out on you like three times. Like you tried to hit me up to try to do this and I keep not being able to. So like I'm glad I can get down here and hang out and we can talk some Royals. I got my Royals Farm Report hat on. Of course I do. But yeah, hey, real quick, hit the like and subscribe button if you like this show, if you like what Joel's doing and everybody with Royals Farm Report has done fantastic work. Hit the like, light subscribe button. So, I know how to do this here on this fine channel. I'm a veteran, you know.
Hey, I appreciate it because I hate telling people to like and subscribe to my own content.
I like Joel's content. Hit the like and subscribe button.
There we go. We actually have a packed episode with a lot of stuff to talk about here over the last week. Before we do that, the show is always brought to you by Kansas City Strength and Conditioning. Let's hear a quick word from them.
From the beginning, we knew right away that we wanted to do strength conditioning and a throwing program for the baseball and softball community. It wasn't something we were trying to back into or all of a sudden learn. We knew we were really good at coaching these skills from the get-go. And the fact that we're in the same business and the employees are all on the same page, you know, we can write a program based off of what a kid needs, not just getting him stronger or faster from a general sense. It's what does this kid need? On the pitching end, we can say, hey, this kid needs such and such. He needs to do this or that better. A lot of times it turns out it's not something that needs to be fixed in the baseball cage or on the throwing mound. It actually needs to be fixed in the weight room.
Big thanks, as always, to KCSE for sponsoring this show. Be sure to check them out down in Homefield in Olathe if you have a baseball or softball player that needs a place to train. All right, Kent, so we'll start with the biggest news that broke earlier this week. Terry Bradshaw, hitting coach, was let go. Alex Zumwalt and Mike Tozar. Alex Zumwalt is the director of hitting development for the Royals. Mike Tozar has worked with Jorge Soler, Salvador Perez, and others within the organization. And they're both in uniform as co-hitting coaches, essentially. The first of, I think, a couple of moves that are going to occur within the coaching staff here in the near future. This one makes the most sense to happen early. And Alex, Josh, and I talked about it earlier this week that the Royals have somebody that they could bring in with like in-house and make an in-season move like this quickly. I know there's a lot of talk about Cal Eldred pitching, and I think that's coming soon. But this was a move they can make right away to fix one of the worst offenses in baseball. There's at least something there.
Right. And I think that's the most important part. The infrastructure was there. And this is a group of guys sitting underneath Terry Bradshaw that have gotten a lot of people really excited because you've seen the growth and development in some of the hitters that, you know, that in the minor league system. And, you know, you look at what MJ Melendez and his growth going from a horrendous season and kind of going through, you know, the pandemic and all that stuff, and really seeing his growth to where he has at this point in his career. And Nick Prado kind of, I don't want to say risen from the dead for both of those guys, but
no, you're right.
I mean, it's pretty close. Yeah. Right. It's like, you know,
both of those guys went from top 100 prospects to like not even prospects. And now they're back in the top 100 just that fast.
Right. And so like the development that you've seen at the minor league, you kind of want them, you kind of want a little bit of that, the majors now. Like, I think that's like, I think we've all kind of had the same thought. It's like, you probably like, I don't know if you were stressed that you, to see the hitting development group get poached, you know, like I've been like scared that like that group was going to get thinned out pretty good. But now there's more runway for that group too, because Terry Bradshaw is gone. And like, you never celebrate someone being let go or no longer with the organization or anything, but at the same time, like this is probably what's best and what's in the best interest of this organization.
You have to hit at the big league level. And you have too many young guys that are coming up now that have relationships built with Tozar and Zumwalt and Drew Saylor, who's still working as a rover around the minor leagues, that has completely revitalized the hitting development at the minor league level. Stuff that Alex and I and Josh and I have talked about for years, that this, it's remarkable, complete philosophical change that clearly needed to happen at the big league level too. So you have these guys like Bobby Witt Jr. and Kyle Isbell, MJ Melendez, Nick Prado, Vinny Pasquantino, not too far behind, that have built relationships with these guys and have seen success working with them. So you might as well try and bring them up. And I appreciate the fact that I'm sure that Dayton Moore listens to this podcast and thinks super highly of me and finally decided to listen to my advice of, hey, do something different. Make a change, whatever that may be, just to try and see some sort of improvement toward next year. This is the first step in that.
Well, now, yeah, it's not in his DNA to make too many changes, you know.
No,
he's, well, yeah, I know. He's not very transactional. But it's good that they finally did it. It's good that they finally, you know, are trying something different. And I know we're going to talk about some of the younger guys later, but I mean, like one of the most advanced, like some of the most advanced plate appearances that we've seen in recent memory has been specifically MJ Melendez. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you've seen him, you know, you heard some of Dayton Moore's comments about, hey, you know, just the quality of at bats that this team has had has just not been particularly strong. Well, I look to a guy like Melendez, who has less of the stink of Terry Bradshaw on him than anybody else. And boy, he's put some really, really strong, consistent at bats together, you know, making guys make pitches, finding some walks. I think it's been impressive. So, you know, you're hoping to see more consistency in that process. And, you know, maybe it's a snowball effect when it comes to, hey, let's eat into the starting pitching a little bit quicker. Cause this team drives me nuts. It drives me nuts how much they get. Like, I think it was like today or yesterday, the Royals had, it might have been today, it was like the Royals got the bases loaded on like 14 pitches and like they let the pitcher off in like 20 in one inning. It's just like, it's just so frustrating. This team doesn't punish pitchers and doesn't force them to stretch themselves out and put pressure on them. It drives me nuts.
Well, it's a complete philosophical change that needs to happen, because yes, the Royals don't strike out a lot. They're actually one of the like lowest strikeout percentage teams in the league, which you would think would lead to success, but they also don't walk a lot and they're swinging more. So it's not about not striking out. It's about the quality of contact you're putting in, and they're not doing that. The guys that are in the minor leagues right now are actually walking, and they have multiple guys at each level that are walking 10%+. That's not always an incredible indicator because sample sizes change, but guys are actually like hunting pitches in the minor leagues. Like, hey, it's 2-0. All right, let's go. Or, hey, 3-1, he hasn't come near me. I'm going to let this go, and I'm going to take my pace. And I'm all for aggression for the most part. Like, hitting a baseball is hard. So when you have your opportunity, go take it. But at the same time, you got to work quality at-bats, quality pitches, and that's, you know, part of growing as a big leaguer. There are guys like Salvador Perez that are going to make a living not walking, and that's fine because he hits home runs. So you just kind of take it with what it is. But too many guys in this team, Sans, Carlos Santana, and MJ Melendez, are swinging too much, striking out too much, not walking. So there needs to be that philosophical change. Hopefully Zumwalt and Tozar can at least bring some semblance of it. Even if it's like a 40%, like 40% of what they're doing at the minor league level, that's going to pay dividends at the big leagues.
Well, and like, yeah, I mean, pitch selection just across the board is like, that's that. I mean, pitch selection with being selective about what you're actually swinging at. Like, this team is rushing to resolution quickly. It's just like, and I mean, it's been like that for, I mean, it was like that when the Royals were good.
Oh yeah. You know, they were able to do it. And they, again, they didn't hit a lot of home runs. They didn't walk. They didn't strike out, and they won a World Series. So I think there is some level of, well, it worked then, it can work now, but no.
Yeah. It's just like
this, even 7 years ago, everyone was throwing 97 with cut and sink and sweepers and like all this stuff that's out now. Like, baseball is so different even from then. And it's long ago.
It doesn't feel like the strategy and philosophy has advanced and grown enough with the way that baseball is being played.
Right.
And the types of arms, like, you know, like, you remember the kind of arms the Royals had in the back end of their pen in the, you know, mid 2010s, which, oh my, I can't believe how long ago it's been now.
Right.
But I mean, everybody's got that now. Yep. You know, it's just like, there's a lot of arms out there in the Royals. The Royals, like, they haven't adapted, and their plate appearances are horrendous a lot of the times. And we'll see if this helps. It's just some of it's, I don't want to completely throw Terry Bradshaw under the bus entirely either, because some of it's just talent or lack thereof. Carlos Santana's bad now. Like, he's like the approach, I don't really see it getting any better. This is a guy that has historically, you know, been a guy that gets on base. And I mean, to some degree, like, you know, his split between on base percentage and batting average, you know, you're normally seeing 100 or 100 plus. And he's just not hitting. Like, he's just not making any contact whatsoever. And like, that's alarming. So, like, you know, maybe it's time to move on from him. I don't know. We'll see.
And what I also think is noteworthy with this is that it seems like, from little rumblings and things like that, the players really didn't connect with Bradshaw at all. They really didn't get along with him that well, especially toward the end. And when the announcement was made that Zumwalt and Tosa were coming in, players were excited. Alex, you know, said, you know, we got anonymous, you know, quote, like, hey, it's party time. Like, guys are ready and excited to have these guys in the locker room and be able to work with them. So it seems like there's changes to be made there, and that's exciting that players are ready. Players recognize it, and now we'll see how things go. And they're actually been, they lost 3 out of 5 to the White Sox. I don't think they played horribly the entire time. Like, there was obviously some stink, but I think there was at least some good things to take away. Now, I know everybody wants to talk about the pitching coach, and I get it, right? I 100% understand. And this is not going to be me calling for his job, even though I maybe say things along that line off air.
Did you watch any Carlos Hernandez today? Anyway, sorry.
I was unfortunately at the office, and I did not. But I've never been a big Carlos Hernandez guy. So 5 walks, he's all over the place. His fastball is not deceptive. I think he needs to. I think the corresponding move that's going to be coming soon is Brady Singer's going to come back up, and Hernandez is going to go down and work, and that's fine. I'm not writing off Carlos Hernandez as a big leaguer. I just don't know what the role is at this point. I think he's got to get right in AAA. But I thought it was interesting. We talk all the time about Dayton Moore's loyalty to his guys and loyalty to a fault at times, and it certainly feels like that is the case with Cal Eldred at this point. When asked about Cal Eldred and the future of the pitching coach in the organization, he said, Dayton Moore said, quote, we continue to analyze all aspects of the organization. Not necessarily a ringing endorsement. That is GM speak for we're working on it.
He gone.
In the words of the great Hawk Harrelson, he gone. I don't know when that will be. I don't think the leash is going to be long. But it certainly feels like change is heading in that direction. And I don't know what that means for the managerial side of things, but when the pitching coach and the hitting coach are gone, it's almost like when the offensive and defensive coordinator get fired in the NFL. Like, there's some writing on the wall there for all involved. So I don't know if all of those changes are going to happen mid-season, but certainly feels like the coaching staff will be different in 2023.
Oh, 100%.
And it has to be.
It has to be. And yeah, I wouldn't be stunned if it ends with, you know, if Matheny's, you know, time ends here in Kansas City too, especially, you know, you see some of the younger guys starting to get up. Like, this is such a crucial pivotal point for this organization. And I think the Royals have to start asking themselves some questions is like, if what we've seen, the development, the growth, the advancement that we've seen at the major league level for the last few seasons, is that growth, that developmental arc, you know, something that we want to carry over into a crucial time in this organization's, you know, history, because, you know, a lot's riding on this wave that's coming in now.
Yep.
Like, you were terrible for 5 years and mildly competitive for a year or two after the winning the World Series for this moment. You played, you know, you didn't go full tank mode, so you had to pick fifth-ish every year. But you've got all these guys except for Bobby Witt, but you've got all these guys that you're bringing up here that you've, you know, that have really come through the organization. They've come through a hitting philosophy that has really helped them develop. And now you're sitting here like you're making big decisions about, you know, if this is the group that you think is going to develop this wave of talent, you know. And I don't think that there's been enough at certainly this point not. To say that this is the right guy to lead this organization moving forward in a pivotal point in their career. I mean, I still think, you know, you hear about some of the stories about Matheny in St. Louis and how his time ended and how poorly he treated young players and how
he played veterans that weren't worthy of the time over young players
and let veterans kind of run the show. And they ran it poorly, and it affected the growth of some young guys. Boy, that scares me. You can say he's changed and all that stuff, but like, I'd more interest. Like, I know there's something to be said about consistency and all that stuff, right? And there's something to be said about stability, especially for a younger guy coming into the majors, wants to feel comfortable with everything around him. All right, cool, I agree, whatever. But boy, the Royals can't miss. They can't miss on this. They missed on Cal Eldred. They missed on Terry Bradshaw. I think they missed on Mike Matheny. I think we all thought they missed when they signed him. You know, when they hired him. So they haven't done anything to sway my opinion, and that it's scary. It's a scary pivotal moment here in the next 365 days for this organization.
Yeah, the rest of this year in 2023. Are pivotal in that if you bottom out this year, like it kind of, you know, feels like it could, especially with if you're not going to continue, not going to play young players, then 2023 is you better win. Mm-hmm. You better at least start. And if you don't, who knows when it's going to happen. And with the margin for error that a small market team like the Royals has, you can't miss on this window. Or you can't let the window continue to stay closed and keep passing you by, because this city has other stuff to, you know, to look at.
They do?
You got, yeah, just a little bit, you know, like the greatest football player on the planet, you know, just across the parking lot over at Arrowhead.
Interesting.
That, you know, you can keep track of 24/7 because the NFL machine is bonkers. People will stop paying attention if they don't. You know, it was different when the Royals were losing from 85 to 15 because you didn't have Patrick LeVon Mahomes. We don't know what true, like all the success looked like, right? As a city, just in general, right?
I mean, even sounds wild, but I'm sorry, like even 7 years, a lot's changed.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, like just the way, like, unfortunately, the way MLB is being consumed, it's mm-hmm. harder than ever to watch a team. So why are you going to go out of your way to watch a bad baseball team?
And hashtag always game.
Hashtag always game. I still got on my way. I got a sweet little VPN deal set up. And if you're T-Mobile or Sprint, you get MLB TV for free. So all I had to do was buy a VPN. I can watch the Royals. But
there you go. The fact that you even have to do that living 30, 40 minutes from the stadium is wild.
I hate having to pretend to be in New York to watch the Royals play.
Yep.
It's just, it's infuriating. It's, you know, and so, yeah, I care deeply about this team. It's like part of who I am, but is my kid going to feel like that with how just, you know, if they're not good and it's hard to access them, like I can't watch the games with my kid on TV. I have to watch it on my phone. That's so it's like, awful. That's like, that's already something that like is taken away from me. Cause like when I was his age, I was watching them on TV.
Yeah. It's, That's a larger conversation about baseball at large.
I know. I'm sorry.
But no, you're not. But you're not wrong. I mean,
it's specific with the Royals too, because like you've got to be like to have hope. They need to. We need some hope.
For real.
There's got to be something to watch.
Hey, we got a little bit of hope earlier this week. Brady Singer looked like he kind of figured things out. Mm-hmm. If we're going to go positive vibes here, we have to go positive vibes for just a little bit. Brady Singer comes back up from AAA after making a couple of starts there where it really felt like the emphasis was throw your changeup.
Yeah.
Work on it. I don't care if you throw it 40 times. I don't care if they hit it over the fence 38. You're going to get used to throwing it. He comes back up and he threw 16 and he got 8 swinging or called strikes on it. He had a 43% called strike whiff percentage, which is really impressive considering this is the first game that he's truly featured it as a third pitch and not just here's one just to throw it, right? Mm-hmm. And the stuff looked electric overall. 7 innings, 9 strikeouts, no runs, 3 hits, scattered him against a solid White Sox lineup. Felt like he got kind of turned the corner. And I hope that, and I think he'll start again later this week. He was returned down to Omaha. And I know people were confused about that. I didn't realize it, but I guess when you are the 27th man up for doubleheader, you have to be returned after regardless. So a corresponding move has to be made to get him back up onto the 26th man roster, which I assume is going to be coming soon because Brady Singer's not making another start in Omaha, especially with what he did on Wednesday night, I believe, Tuesday night.
Yeah.
There's no way that you can go and have Brady Singer throwing more outings in Omaha. You need somebody to solidify the rotation with Zach Greinke, Brad Keller, and Daniel Lynch. And I think Brady Singer, at least it's one start, but certainly looked the most confident. And that was the best he has looked as a Royal by far.
Yeah. I mean, he's had flashes like that, but it's like, but not with the changeup. I think the command and the way he was able to utilize the changeup, obviously, you know, you've seen the fastball slider combination a lot, and it's been very successful. And I mean, he's still a guy that's going to be aggressive. He's going to try to pound the zone. He's going to come right at you. But like being able to mix in that changeup a little bit and the timing utilizing that changeup was outstanding. And yes. I mean, guys, I mean, it's legit. There's some plus offerings, you know, with the changeup. And like, that was kind of surprising. And it's frustrating that it's taken this long to beat that into his head. And it sounds like it's, you know, he's been a little bit stubborn about utilizing the changeup. And I mean, again, like if you want to talk about trying to get through to somebody, Cal Eldred, I mean, hey, why did it take so long? I think Alec Lewis might've said something about that too. In his article, it's like, yeah, it shouldn't take this much to try to beat it into his head. Like that's not a positive sign for Cal Eldred. But man, he was outstanding, and the changeup working at the bottom of the zone, falling off. Like, I mean, the placement down there was outstanding. It was showing up in the zone, or it was starting in the zone and falling out at the bottom of it a lot. Like it's encouraging, and at least being able to put that on tape and show that, like, that's going to be a big deal for him moving forward, because like if he can continue to build off the momentum, and you know, maybe some teams are gonna say, okay, we're gonna make you throw our changeup, we're still gonna sit fastball slider, like that may not be a bad approach for some of these teams until he shows he can consistently box it and place it. But I mean, you got to start somewhere, and that's exactly what you want to see if you're Royals fans.
And I mean, I feel like most Royals fans that follow the team closely are just screaming into the void for years of just throw it. It doesn't have to be a great pitch. It has to be there.
Got to have a mix.
Got to add to the mix. Like, it doesn't have to be spectacular. Just add, you know, subtract a little velo, you know, just show it so you can throw it in a 2-1 count. So at least it's at least there. And he wouldn't do that for so long. It seems like he now has the confidence to throw it. I'm sure some of it is just finding a grip that worked for him and finding the design of the pitch that made it work for him. It seems like he's kind of figured it out, and I don't expect him to go out there and make it a feature, but just, again, just let it be there and then run 96 with that, the run he gets, and then we're good. And he can be a solid 3 or 4 in this rotation, which is what he is. You know, that's what his ceiling is. And if he's your 3, that's a great 3. Or if he's your 4, that still is a really good 4. So I'm excited. I'm a little more optimistic about him now than I was a couple of weeks ago, because I was about out on Brady Singer as a starter in the big leagues. But this at least gives me a little bit of pause in maybe there's something there. And I hope that if he strings together 2 or 3 more starts, then I'll be back driving the hype train.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't think I was ever out entirely on him. You knew that there was just going to be some serious obstacles for him to navigate. Like, it wasn't a death sentence for him to not have it, but it was going to present some big challenges. And it was encouraging to see that whatever, you know, him convinced and good and ready to, you know, confident enough to throw that finally happened. Coincidentally, he went to the minors and good things happened.
But, yeah, I mean, I don't want to look into coincidences too much, but
it's weird, right? So, but yeah, no, if he can carry this process over and continue to stay in this vein, continue to throw some level of confidence, some level, it doesn't have to, like I said, you just have to be like a game changing pitch. This has to be enough. Show a 3-pitch mix. That's going to be enough for him to sustain a solid career for the remainder of his time in Kansas City.
Absolutely. And
stacking a few more guys like him, if they can get Bubich to play, if they can all kind of pitch that same kind of level, I mean, that's enough. Like, you're thrilled with the 2018 draft class, even if you don't get a top of the rotation guy. If you can stack together a bunch of three type pitchers, like that's not a bad thing. I mean, it's hard to develop pitching. It's hard to find pitching.
That's why there's no such thing as a pitching prospect.
There's no such thing as a pitching prospect, and these pitching processes will break your heart, and all of them have this year. But that's another story.
I am a little bit – so I didn't even think about this in the rundown, but Chris Bubich got optioned down to AAA. John Heasley came up. It was interesting that Bubich's last outing with the Royals before he got sent down was in Texas as a reliever, and he was throwing 97. The only time I've ever seen Chris Bubich throw 97 was in his first start in the big leagues against the White Sox. And I'm sure it was like all adrenaline, because every time after that, it was 91, 92, occasionally 94. I am intrigued at how they're going to use him in Omaha. If maybe they go, hey, go just light it up for an inning. Because the command is obviously not there for him to throw for multiple innings, or at least start. Could this be the beginning of reliever Chris Bubich? I wouldn't hate it. I wouldn't.
I don't want to give up on Bubich the starter yet.
I don't think it's giving up on him. I don't, because and we've talked to scouts. We interviewed a guy, Jeff Pontus from Baseball America, one of our first episodes here at KCSN, and talked about just like the value of a pitcher. And a elite reliever is as valuable as a 3 or 4 starter. What's Chris Bubich in the big leagues? A 3 or 4 at best. Mm-hmm. So the value is about the same. And if he can find a way to just blow it out for an inning or two at a time, and you can live with, you know, some command issues in the bullpen because you're not having sustain for, you know, for so long. And maybe this teaches him to like throw the crap out of the ball and not aim it at 90 or 89 and miss arm side and up
every single
time. So maybe this could be good for him in that go throw hard and actually throw the crap out of the ball. And then you mix in your curveball and actually throw the slider that you want to have the emphasis on. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I bet they may start him a little bit, but I wouldn't hate seeing him maybe in the 7th, 8th inning.
I would just be curious to see if they can get him to throw some conviction.
Like, I think that's the biggest thing.
And maybe throwing out of the pen allows them to be a little bit more deliberate with that, and that helps. But like, just like, I think whatever it is, whatever they decide, however they decide to do it, just throw a fastball with some conviction, because it's so immensely frustrating. It snowballs for him too.
It does.
The command snowballs for him so bad. It's like, you know, he starts getting cute early. He tries to nibble, maybe doesn't get a call, and things just kind of snowball from there. And then, yeah, then the arm side run just starts happening very consistently. It's just whatever role gets him to start throwing his fastball with conviction is what I want to see him, you know, to see for him. Him going to the pen will be interesting if that does happen, though, because his process is just so, it's just so slow and deliberate. Like, I just wonder if like that even bodes well for him. Oh, and like, let's put him in high leverage situations where, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know.
That was some of the best he's looked all year when he was in the bullpen. I know it wasn't high leverage, but it was in the 9th inning of a I think it was like 6-2 or something like that.
Didn't he still give up a home run though?
I think so, but I think it was Corey Seager. So like,
you know, what are you going to do? Lefty crime.
But yeah, like, I think the funk of his delivery with the deception he creates, and if he can actually run his fastball up into the mid 90s and hit some uppers every once in a while, could play nicely.
I mean, it could. I mean, it's, and it's stuff. His stuff's on. Like, I really like his stuff. Like, I,
yes,
I really believe in Bubich. I'm interested to see. Yeah, I'm interested to see if the Chief, if the Royals. See what I did there?
You've done that like four times. I'm counting.
You know, yeah, drink every time I do that, right? It's, I just, I'm fascinated to see if that's what the Royals are committed to doing. And is it, and I'll be questioning if it's the right thing right now too.
That's also 100% fair. So what's been interesting to see since Zumal and Tosar have come up, notice more lineups with some young guys in it. Consistently, we're getting Bobby in the lineup every day. We're getting MJ in the lineup every day now. It seems like he's played, I think, four games in a row without an off day. I know he'll need some soon because he's going to be catching a lot with Salvi on the injured list. Caught
back-to-backs on a doubleheader.
I hope the pitching staff bought him dinner. I think he's 21. I hope they bought him a cocktail and said, thanks, dude. You got 18 innings for us today.
That was nuts.
I mean, that's the kind of stuff you see like in summer ball for like high school kids. And even then, they don't let that happen anymore because it's so,
I
was
going to say, like, our catchers didn't catch, you know, more than one game very often when we were in high school.
So. I remember my buddy one time caught four. He was our only catcher. He caught four games in one day. It was in the upper 90s all day. And he was, I think he lost like 10 pounds that day. Just nuts. But hey, credit to MJ. And he's looked really good at the plate. And Kyle Lispell's getting in the lineup every day now, it seems like. We are seeing less Ryan O'Hearn after the 0-for-4 with four strikeouts, leaving eight runners on base. I think they learned their lesson a little bit of, you know, maybe putting him in the cleanup spot where he has one hit all year. Probably isn't the best idea. But
how many hits not pinch hitting does he have?
I think he has two. I think two. But apparently pinch hitter Ryan O'Hearn is amazing. And if that's his role and he gets maybe another 70 at-bats all year, cool, that's fine. But no, they're going to keep throwing him back out in the lineup because what the hell do I know?
Of course they are.
Exactly.
Matheny'd.
But the
Yosted.
Oof. Hey,
Matheny'd.
But you know who has a ring? You know, managing for the Kansas City Royals. You know, I think.
I love the
hashtag Yosted stuff. Once they won the World Series, I'm like, I'm never doing that again.
I still did it, but like ironically. Because fair like enough. They did something that like I didn't think what I would ever see in my life. So like I don't care anymore.
But the crux of this is for 2 weeks I have been screaming into the void in this podcast platform that tens of people listen to of let the kids play. You have to let these dudes get, because your best players are your young guys and Salvador Perez. Like, and it seems like, you know, getting them in the lineup every day and getting them on a routine and kind of figuring where they need to be in the lineup. Oh, it actually works.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Yeah, I mean, like, and there's definitely been some moments where I'm wondering what this team is doing and why these guys aren't playing more consistently. And like, I think we know why, But finally getting these guys a little bit more consistency, I think, is giving them opportunities to play and get better with their processes. I think Kyle Isbell has looked better with more consistent playing time. Almost recently.
Funny how that works, right?
It's weird, right? And like, but some of the plate appearances that he's been able to put together recently, last couple of days specifically, I was very impressed with. And I mean, even today, you know, I think he had some really strong EVs. So, yeah, I mean, he's proven himself to be a decent little contributor here. Obviously, the power's not really been there to a level that you're excited about. You would hope he's, you know, kind of, you know, putting the ball in the gaps a little bit more consistently, driving the ball a little bit more than he has. But
he's hitting the ball hard. He has, I think, of his 31 batted ball events this year, 10 or 11 or 100 miles an hour or better for Isbell.
It's wild.
It's now, insane. there's some bad luck in there. I think at least three or four of them are lineouts right to people. But
sure,
you hit the ball hard, the ball will drop eventually.
And it's dropping form a little bit right now. I think he put two hits on the board today. But yeah, it's get these guys a little bit more consistent playing time. Like MJ's rewarded you with a couple bombs recently. And Bobby Witt is reward. I mean, Bobby's, I don't think him, the quote unquote playing more consistent. He's playing consistently enough. I think they've jerked him around with where he lined him up in the lineup too much. But,
I agree with that.
But at the same time, like he's coming along. He's been punishing some baseballs. He's been punishing some baseballs recently, hitting some more home runs, hitting with a little bit more power.
Very quietly, Bobby Witt Jr. is right around league average Witt runs created plus. I believe coming into today it was 97. Hit a double today. I don't know if it's been updated, but I mean, he went from about 50, 60, and then just shot up out of nowhere. And I talked about when he got his first homer, he's going to get rolling for him. And yeah, 4 home runs in 8 games, 8 of his last 15 hits are extra base hits. He had a double today, scorching the ball too. All 4 of his home runs are 415 or 417 or longer. It's pretty good. I think as our buddy Alec Lewis will say, that'll play. Hit a ball 437 off Lucas Giolito, hanging curveball too. So it's not like Giolito left him a fastball.
That was good to see. Work. That was good to see him turn and burn on a curveball. Yep.
And then I forget how ridiculously strong MJ Melendez is. Did you see the swing he put on his first home run?
That was insane.
Like, I didn't think that ball was going to leave because he came out of it, like his front hip leaked and he just kind of threw his hands.
The ball kept flying.
It went to the party porch.
You know, like it was kind of like it wasn't quite a booty knock, like as HUD likes to say, but like it was kind of close. He dropped the hands and like his butt was kind of sticking out a little bit, and he still was able to get enough on that. I was like, I didn't know that he had that much in him, honestly.
Well, I knew he did, but it's one of those you kind of forget it because it's not like he's a very imposing type dude. He's just like very compact and strong. And then he drives a ball out to left center about where Bobby hit his from the left side. I mean, it's crazy what these guys are doing. And I can't wait until hopefully like July or maybe even sooner. We get Vinny P in there and Prado.
I'm so stunned we're talking about Vinny P right now. I
take a drink if I mentioned Vinny Pasquantino. I think I've done it every episode.
I made that joke. I think I made a joke like that when I was on.
We're the other day. We're the OG Vinny Pasquantino stands.
You really are. You guys really are. I was kind of curious to see if the power was going to translate because I'm not saying that MJ had a lot of home runs that kind of looked aesthetically similar to what we saw, you know, with that little booty knock. But there's definitely some that you kind of wonder, okay, like, is that repeatable at the next level? And like what we saw from, you know, that home run specifically is like, okay. Like this maybe is a little bit more repeatable.
There's a ton of raw power in there.
Yeah, there's more than I really maybe gave him credit for. And I still thought he was a good hitter, and I thought he was going to be capable. But that was one of the more impressive home runs that we've seen.
Oh yeah, and it keeps coming for these guys. They are the main reason why. And I want to give Emmanuel Rivera some credit too. I don't know what kind of big league regular he can be, but what he has done stepping in has been impressive. Mm-hmm. He finds a way to get a couple of key knocks. He had the go-ahead triple last night and hit a 2 RBI triple. And he's not necessarily a burner, but made the play. He's hit a couple home runs, hit a moonshot out in Colorado, a couple moonshots out in Colorado. So, and he plays a good third base. He's doing everything you need in a bench, you know, corner infield type. And I think that's perfectly fine for the role that he plays. So I'm happy for him. I didn't know what kind of, you know, big league potential he had, but in the short time that he's been able to play in the big leagues, he's been good. And I want to make sure he gets his credit too. The guy, the Royals won, we're recording on Thursday, Wednesday when they played and won 6-2. And MJ, Bobby, Emmanuel Rivera, Kyle Isbell went 8-for-15, 5 RBIs and 2 home runs.
You love to see it.
Almost maybe, like playing
maybe,
the kids.
Maybe the wave, maybe the, oh, sorry. I'm not trying to take away your thunder. Go for it.
No, I was like, maybe playing the kids, you know, maybe it works. Maybe getting more in the lineup every day with some more quality at bats will make the difference here.
I was teeing up for you to just scream, let the kids play.
Let the kids play, damn it.
There it is.
Right. Oh yeah, exactly. And I think Vinny Pasquantino has a home run tonight in Omaha. I think he has a double. Prado hit two absolute moon bombs.
He's playing left field tonight.
Yep. He's a good athlete, man.
I think he's capable. Yeah, I wouldn't be stunned if they move him around. I have a wild thought real quick. I'm sorry.
Go for it.
I had this harebrained, wild idea. What if they played him at first base? I mean, the Royals aren't playing a first baseman right now.
No, they're not.
They're playing the ghost of Carlos Santana. Yeah. I think they might be playing Carlos Santana, the guitarist, at first.
He might be able to hit this, but they hit about the same.
I mean, that's what I'm. Wait, hold on, really quick. How many more days until like the service level is, or like the service time is manipulated?
Oh, that's been up. That's been up for.
All right, we're good then. Okay.
Yeah, we're good then.
Let's go.
So I just thought about this. We talk about him playing in left field. Maybe Andrew Benintendi isn't here on July 31st.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, the way he's hitting right now,
you probably can get a couple decent prospects.
You can get some assets for Benintendi. Like, I think if he's trending the way he is, like, you're going to be able to get something.
I am not full trade Benintendi. I'm also not full give Benintendi an extension. I'm just like, whatever they do will be kind of interesting. I don't want them to give him an extension, but I'll be interested to see what they do.
I think they should trade him.
I think they should too. I think they should. I think they should. Whether they do or not is an entirely different story.
No, they'll probably just let him play out the rest of the year, win 72 games, and get nothing for him.
Yeah, because the comp pick thing is a qualifying offer pick is a comp pick is gone now.
He's not gonna. I don't know. I'd trade him. I'd move on from him.
I think so too.
I love Amir Garrett. I think Amir Garrett's gone.
No. I want to keep him around. I love that.
I love him. Did you see?
He tried to eject the umpire.
He got kicked out today.
I know. He got tossed, and they tried to toss the umpire. I love the confidence. Oh,
it was so good. Like, he's like one of my favorite Royals now.
Because, like, you need that wild card in the bullpen. Like, you got to have one crazy dude. The dude that's going to go out, he's going to throw 96, shove it by, guys. And then you don't know what he's going to do. Is he going to talk some shit? Is he going to just walk to the dugout all quiet? Is he going to go fight an entire dugout, an entire team by himself? Or is he going to try and eject an umpire? Like, you need that wild card in there.
And then, I mean, he provides it. I was going to say this too. Like, I'm so disappointed that the Royals are wasting a very good bullpen during the time of year where, like, by the time the bats and the starting pitching comes around, the bullpen's going to be exhausted.
Yep.
And it's just so frustrating because the bullpen's been great.
Yes.
I have no qualms with the bullpen. Pretty
much across the board, man.
Right. Like, they're deep, and they've got a lot of guys that are playing or pitching pretty well right now, and they're just going to waste it.
They were doing that when they were back in the early 2010s as well.
It's frustrating.
Watching Greg Holland save 45 games on a 68-win team.
Painful.
Yep. So one more quick note to hit here. Michael A. Taylor went on the COVID IL, I believe. And so you don't have to make a true 40-man move for that. You can call up anybody. And they called up a Dairon Blanco. He has been in the system for a couple of years. He was in the Jake Diekman trade in 2019.
Cool.
He's 29 years old. So I know that seems kind of old for a prospect, but he is a Cuban, defected, and didn't make his American debut until he was 25 in the A's organization. So only been in the States for a couple of years, but he's been solid. Hit 344 over his last 18 games. Little bit of pop. really good defender, can really go out and get it out in center field. Great runner, steals a lot of bases, a little bit of power. He's a great fourth outfielder. Like, he's kind of like an Edward Olivares type, but a little bit better defender. It's kind of the comp I can give here. And for
and
a guy
you check,
like that,
if you check his Wikipedia, he's dead.
That's weird.
The Royals activated him from the grave because he died in November of 2020.
That is why has that not been updated? That's weird.
Hashtag always game.
Hashtag always game. But no, I'm happy to see him up. He's the guy that I kind of was intrigued by. I saw him in the Texas League in 2019 when he was in the A's organization. And a dude that I was, you know, there could be something here. And when the Royals traded Diekman to the A's, I was like, okay, come go get Dyron Blanco, please. He kind of fits the Royals mold and cut his teeth for the last few years between AA and AAA and finally gets his opportunity. So that's certainly a cool thing to see. He'll get a couple of starts here and there, I'd imagine, or at least some like defensive replacements, pinch run opportunities, and good organizational depth, but a really good story.
You saw, I don't know if you saw Matheny talk about him. He's just bouncing around. He said he was bouncing around the locker room, just ready to go, really excited. And I mean, he should be getting his opportunity to play in the major leagues, and you know, hopefully he makes the most of it. Hopefully he gets some opportunities, you know, like we'll see what kind of opportunities he actively gets. But yeah, I'm interested to see what he does and if he's able to, you know, it's hard to be a fourth outfielder in Major League Baseball and stick.
Yes.
And, you know, people don't realize that. So like, I mean, you know, hopefully he's a guy that's actually going to get a chance.
My thought process on giving Dyron Blanco playing time, what do you have to lose?
Nothing. You're already losing.
Yeah.
I'm so negative and pessimistic. I'm sorry.
Because I'm the same way. I really am about like all sports. Like, I am the worst person to watch any sporting event with because I'm so cynical and it's awful and it's a horrible behavior. And I'm trying to be better about it.
I think we're so conditioned as Royals fans to default to sarcasm.
Yes. And some of it too, like, I don't want to spend the whole year coming on this show and being like, man, this team is awful and terrible and fire everybody and blow it up, and because the season's too long for that. You can do that in a 17-week football season.
And I can do it right now because like I'm just driving by here.
Exactly.
So I don't
have to host this thing every week, and I don't want to be on here. People are like, crap, Joel's just ranting again. My God.
Like, there's reason to rant though.
There is, but I'm trying not to be that guy. At least early on. Now, in July, if things are the same way, then I'm going full Rant Swanson. Like, it's going to happen.
Boy, you got to be careful with that. I tend to black out. I've been hospitalized 3 times after podcasts. So just be careful there, bud.
When was like the first full Rant Swanson moment?
I think it was 2019. It might have been Cam Irving. It might have been like Cam Irving stepping on Mahomes' foot on his, like, I think it was during the 2019, like, early season stretch, like, where they just were losing and Mahomes was hurt and it was just painful to watch. And I went nuts. And then, yeah, Rant came out a few times during that stretch. And some people really like Rant's pretty polarizing, right? I've found Rant to be very polarizing. Some people really don't like it.
The Rant Swanson. Before the unfortunate Super Bowl a couple years ago, I'm sitting at my, like, I'm listening to it at work, and I was working construction at the time, and I was sitting on a ladder, and like, I wanted to just like punch through the drywall. I was like, let's go. And then Sunday happened, and then it was sad.
Yeah, there's like a positive Rant Swanson that pops up from time to time. Yeah. I like that one. That one. Sometimes I have a lot of pent up aggression, and sometimes a word triggers me, and I just go from there.
I try not to listen to the Chiefs to this episodes because I'm like, the Chiefs have already ruined my Sunday. I don't need to make it worse.
Yeah, it's always people are always like, just don't want to listen to anything after a Royals loss, which is great. You know, like you can just kind of see like there's like a dip when the Royals lose. Like, people just don't
Chiefs wanna lose. Wow, you actually flipped at that time.
Wow, I can't do anything right today.
Can't win for losing right now.
Some people don't, not as many people listen when the Chiefs lose. It can hurt it. So,
all right, before I do want to talk a little bit of Chiefs just because I can, and I need a platform to talk about it. Yeah, any final thoughts on the Royals or just anything baseball related?
I am excited to see the arc that Bobby Witt Jr. is on. I really, you know, it seems like he started slow. It's fun. He's kind of picking it up a little bit lately. I don't know if he's going to blister, you know, he's going to hit the ball out of the park at the same rate he has in the last, what you said, 8 games.
Yeah.
But I'm still optimistic that, like, by the end of the year, we might be having the conversation about the AL Rookie of the Year when it's all set up. Because I do
100%.
I think the arc is very much there. I'm pissed about the bullpen being wasted. And that's about it. Yeah.
Bobby Witt Jr. is currently fourth among rookies in F War. And I believe he's second to Jeremy Pena, rookie shortstop for the Astros, for rookie shortstops. So
he's coming.
Certainly trending in a good direction. Julio Rodriguez is kind of getting going a little in Seattle. Spencer Torkelson's still hitting below 200 and striking out a lot. So there's certainly still an avenue for Bobby to make it there. So for the Royals fans that thought that he was a bust 15 games in, like, calm down a little bit. I'm never going to forget some of those tweets saying Bobby Witt Jr. needed to be sent down after 10 games in the big leagues. I'm like, you all or something.
I mean, just watching what he was doing.
It's the same people that thought Patrick Mahomes needed to be benched after, what, one bad game last season?
There was people that, yeah, some people are... Their memories are so short. It's crazy. Oh, yeah. It's crazy. Like even like after the Bengals, like, okay, yeah, Mahomes had a terrible game against the Bengals. He tied the game in 13 seconds 7 days before. He didn't forget how to football. He had one bad game. Give him a break.
Like the first bad playoff game he really had in his entire career.
It's awful.
That's crazy. That's the expectation here. Fourth AFC championship game in a row and people are losing it.
It's wonderful. I wouldn't trade it for anything. Like, you know, it's like the Chiefs have Michael Jordan and everyone wants Michael Jordan and everyone is waiting for Michael Jordan to fail. And Michael Jordan didn't fail very many times.
Are you ready to kick your feet up? Let's fast forward to like December. It's like week 15. And we have seen the AFC arms race, AFC arms race, and the AFC nuclear arms race. And the Chiefs have won the division, and we get to kick our feet up, smoke cigars, and laugh our asses off at the fact that the Broncos, Chargers, and Raiders couldn't do it.
Yeah, they do all that, and the Chiefs are in like a perfect cap situation for 2023. All their young players have developed, and they still have the best player in the world. Like, oh, like this really could be like this is kind of like the experimental year. Like, the Chiefs are going to be good. Don't get me wrong, the Chiefs are going to be good.
And if was a year to do it, it's this year.
You think about it. Like, look, the AFC West went crazy. They all went and tried to add a bunch of old pass rushers. They all traded a bunch of their assets to win now, to win in this window. Specifically, you know, like the Chargers are trying to win now before they have to pay Justin Herbert. And the Broncos are trying to win now because they've got Russell Wilson finally. And they've got to try to win immediately. And the Raiders are a football team in Las Vegas. But like, if this doesn't work for the AFC West, how devastating and demoralizing is it for them for the next decade that they went all in to try to stop Mahomes and the Chiefs sat back and instead of going, you know, punch for punch in free agency with them said, all right, we're going to trade away our best receiver. We're going to have a bunch of draft capital. We're going to invest in the draft. We're going to go cheap. We're going to have a little bit of carryover cap space in 2023. And if we beat you now, you're screwed because next year we're going to have a ton of cap space. And next year, you know, all of our rookies are going to be developed for an additional year. Like this has the makings of the Chiefs. If no one unseats the Chiefs this year, it is going to be an absolutely miserable decade for the rest of the AFC West. And I'm just so here for that happening. And honestly, having Mahomes means you probably still have a chance of doing it, even if your rookies don't play like above their heads. Like, it's just like this might be the year we find out how big the gap is between Mahomes and everybody else.
Well, we talk about like the over my dead body games that he has from time to time. Like, this is going to be like an over my dead body season.
Yeah.
And what's going to be hilarious about it all, like you said, if no one does it this year, and I'm not talking not even the AFC West, just the AFC, then who's going to do it? Because you know Burrow's getting a bag after this year. You know Herbert's getting a bag after this year. I don't know about Lamar, but the Ravens are, you know, they're always going to have good players.
Yeah.
If they decide to give him a bag, that's another team in cap hell. And then the cap hits are really going to start coming for Josh Allen and the Bills. The cap hit's going to come for the Broncos because of Russell Wilson's contract and the extension they're inevitably going to give him.
every team that gives not Patrick Mahomes a lot of money is probably going to wind up not regretting it, but not being able to get the value the same way that the Chiefs are going to be able to get Mahomes value. And I think that's the Mahomes is he's the inefficiency in the market. There's only one of them though.
It is hysterical to think that a $500 million contract is going to look like a discount when some of these other contracts come out.
I mean, it already is. Mm-hmm. I mean, look what Deshaun Watson just got. I don't want to. Yeah, we don't have to go there.
I don't want to go there.
But like, they've got Mahomes set the standard, and guys are going above that ceiling, and that ceiling is great for the Chiefs every single step of the way. Because they continue to force other teams to pay a lot of money for their quarterbacks. And their quarterback is not as good as our quarterback, even Josh Allen.
Yep. Speaking of Josh Allen, I have a take. And I've been thinking about it for a little bit because I've seen all like kind of the charts that look at like EPA and some of like the other like kind of advanced numbers. And even at Josh Allen's best, he's still not as good as Patrick Mahomes, which we all know. But the rest of the football world and sports media doesn't, because they're bored with the greatness of 15. But like Apex Josh Allen's stupid, like ridiculous. And we've seen what Apex Josh Allen looks like. But we also have seen that because he had Brian Daboll. Brian Daboll's not there anymore. Mm-hmm. Have we already seen what Apex Josh Allen is and it's never going to be that good again?
Man.
I'm not convinced. Like, it's not that I think he's going to be bad. I don't think he's going to fall off a cliff. But I don't think he's ever going to be as good as he was last year. I don't think the highs are going to be as high for him.
Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, there's probably some merit to what you're saying, and I'm more interested to see if this stability of Brian Daboll being there is a factor in all this. But Ken Dorsey's still there, so he's a really quality addition. I believe I'm gonna double check this. Joe Brady is also there.
Is he really?
Hold on, let me double check. He's the quarterback coach for the Bills.
Oh shoot. Okay.
So there's still some good offensive firepower there. There's still some, you know, or some brain power there. Man, Joe Brady's younger than me. God, I feel old. But I mean, they've got good infrastructure there. They got a good football team. I think Josh Allen is probably not going to reach the full potential that he has in him, because I do think there are some ball placement issues that'll probably keep him from, you know, achieving. But like, this version of him is very, very, very good and can win a Super Bowl. So I think there's probably a little bit more for him to achieve still. I don't know how much more beyond what he's done to this point he's going to be able to do. So close to Apex, but not Apex for me.
Fair. I just thought of one last thing. So Tyreek Hill got his bag in Miami. Good for him getting paid, all that.
No, I would not pay Mecole Hardman.
I wouldn't either.
I just didn't know if that was the question.
No. We've had this conversation in the DMs before. I wouldn't either. But we've seen, like, Tyreek Hill got his bag, and good for him. The hysterical video of Tua throwing like maybe a 30-yard pass and underthrowing him. And then Miami fans so down bad trying to relate that throw to Mahomes throwing on the run, rolling out right, getting chased by Jadeveon Clowney and Myles Garrett. In a real game as the same throw. What might have been my favorite hysterical tweet of the offseason.
They're coping so hard right now. And like, I mean, they gotta do what they can. They gotta talk themselves into it however they want. And I mean, good for them. There was some like fake like throwgate video that came up of like people trying to prove the throw wasn't as bad as the camera angle made it to. It's just like
all I don't of it care. Tyreek had to come back probably 2 or 3 yards for that ball in shorts and no pads. God, it's hysterical. I say that, and I have Tua in one of my dynasty leagues.
So how does a social media team get permitted to post that? Is what I want to know.
And then leave it up. I think it's still up.
Of course it is. Nope. I mean, that's the only time that people are talking about Miami. They wouldn't trade for Tyreek Hill, and no one's really talking about it.
That's true. Yeah. God, it's so funny.
God, it kills me. It's great. I you know, Tyreek got the bag, but he's not going to have the same kind of success that he had here.
No, I think I don't think I ever tweeted it because I'm going to wait until later in the season for this one. I think it's in my drafts, just sitting there waiting for like January. But it's Woody Harrelson, you know, using the money to like dab his eyes. It's like Tyreek with a bag after a 6-11 season.
Yeah. Well, I'm rooting for a 6-11. I'm rooting for an 0-17 season because that means the Chiefs' fourth and sixth round picks that they got from Miami in 2023 are all that much more valuable.
Fair enough. Now, how many compensatory formula picks the Chiefs getting next year?
They're slated for two right now.
There we go.
They got one for Melvin Ingram because of that unrestricted free agency tender that they put on him.
That was the weirdest thing I've ever seen. I didn't even know that existed.
I didn't. Yeah, I didn't either. I didn't know you could potentially get compensatory picks on unrestricted free agents and tag them and all. It was great. But yeah, they're slated for a sixth and seventh right now. Surprised a little bit because, like, you know, I thought guys like Tyrann Mathieu would have signed earlier, and if he would have signed, they would have counted towards the formula, and the Chiefs would have got a fourth round pick probably out of it. So, but yeah, they got like 12 picks on the they got 12 picks for 2023. They got the Ryan Poles compensatory pick too for the minority coaching and general manager stuff too. So they got that one as well. So technically three, but two for player transactions.
All right, one last football question. Has Matty Lane already started doing scouting for the 2023 draft guide?
Probably. Probably a little bit. Like that dude's brain doesn't shut off. He's doing a lot of work still on this draft class. So like he's been watching a lot of tape on that. Like he spent a lot of time on Brian Cook, the safety.
I think he's gonna be fun. That dude's gonna be fun.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like probably like our least favorite pick. Like if you were asked the draft guys, like if you were asked the KCSN draft guys, like probably our least favorite pick, but yeah.
I guess for me, I'm just excited to watch a defense that doesn't make business decisions and it's actually about that action a little bit.
Yeah, this group won't do that.
Yeah. So I think that's the fun cultural change of some of the
Sure.
Like Leo Chenal might end up being my favorite player on this defense, like really fast, just because he's gonna fly around the field and just like thump people, and he's gonna be
everyone's favorite. Like he's gonna run blitz and get, or he's gonna blitz and get a sack, or a tackle for loss, and like he'll just be endeared to Chiefs fans forever.
Oh yeah,
it'll be great.
Yep. All right, one last question. We'll get out of here. Thank you so much, Kent. This has been awesome. We're doing it again later this year. Don't dip out on me too much.
I'm gonna ignore your DMs for a couple months at least.
So. That's fair. I get it. What would your walk up song be? If you had to take it out bat in Kauffman Stadium.
Oh man. That's a great question. I'm trying to go back to like what I've had. I pitched in college. My walk up was Crossroads. The John Mayer cover of Crossroads.
Okay.
So that was one. That was my pitching song. I wish I had a good one. I'm sorry. Probably that, just because like it's got a little bit of nostalgia for me. What's yours?
Ooh, okay. So probably if I had to think about it, it would be the fiddle intro to Long Hot Summer Day by the Turnpike Troubadours.
Ooh, you just went to see them in town, or you just went to see them in Texas, didn't you?
I saw them in Texas, and I'm going to see them when they come to Bonner Springs in August.
Okay, they're playing the Cricket Amphitheater or whatever.
Yep. And I'm going to see William Clark Green at Knuckleheads tomorrow, so I'm pretty excited about that.
That's awesome.
Oh yeah,
that's awesome.
Now, yeah, I waited 2 years to go to concerts, so I'm hitting them as many as I can now.
I don't blame you.
All right, buddy. Well, hey, thanks so much for doing this. We're gonna do it again soon. Definitely need to do. I want to hop on 21 Questions with you at some point soon.
Dude, we'll make it happen. We'll make it happen this summer.
Let's do it. All right. Let's do it. Thank you all so much for listening. Be sure to subscribe, like, rate, all follow everything here we're doing at KCSN. Follow the podcast channel, KCSN Kansas City Royals. And you know these guys, they're the flagship of this thing. So go follow Kent, go follow Maddie, Craig, the lab, all that good stuff. And we'll talk to you all next week. And hey, Craig, if you're listening, you're great, buddy. Love you.